This is the New Blue Review with Benji Shulman.
This is 101.9 Chai FM. I am Benji Shulman. This is the New Blue Review. And I am very happy to say that we managed to rip him away from whatever rhinoceros he was sort of hunting in wherever he was, because it's very difficult to get hold of this man when he's not in Joburg, but he is in Joburg. And so we definitely thought we would get him into the studio. Major David Katz, he is a military man, but also a military historian, and has been writing and doing some very interesting things, including relaunching a journal to do with South African military affairs. And so I thought I have to talk to him about this. So that's what we're going to do. Major, welcome to Chai FM. Nice to have you on the show.
Benji, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. Always a pleasure to come and speak to you.
Thank you so much. So it's interesting, when I saw that you were doing this, and I sort of read the journal, in the introduction you've got the head of the armed forces actually gives the introduction to the journal, but it's not a new thing. Actually, you've redone it. It's a historical journal of military affairs.
Yes, well, it's neither new locally nor overseas. The Americans believe a lot in writing, in allowing their officers to write in and ventilate, have a format for ventilating the opinions. And we have had this in the South African Army previously with mixed results and mixed success. And I was approached by the Army to relaunch the South African Army Journal, which is more than just a historical chronicle. Mm-hmm. It's an opportunity to build and ventilate our doctrine, which is very, very important, especially during peacetime. Because peacetime poses certain challenges to a military, because the best form of learning your doctrine is obviously to go out there and fight the war physically. Failing that, you need to apply a little bit of philosophy and intellect to the problem during peacetime. So this is hopefully going to be a format, using modern terminology, a safe space for our officers to come along and talk about the experiences of our doctrine, all the deployments, and where we can sort of build and adjust doctrine according to the changing times. So hopefully this is the void that it's going to fill.
Yeah, I was interested because when I looked at the topics, on the one hand, it's got a very kind of almost trade magazine feel about it, you know, almost logistical. What is the effectiveness of this and this kind of caliber with, you know, very almost technical, basically. Yes, yes. But on the other hand, there is, as you say, this theoretical, almost philosophical element to it, where they're talking about past campaigns, talking about current campaigns, talking about the idea of different parts of the army working together, the effects of AI on military issues. So there is that sort of more wide worldview as well.
Yes, no, obviously we're not going to restrict it to members of the South African National Defence Force. That's not where we're at. We would like to get academics in the field, military scientists, to come in and also make contributions to the journal. And I will accept, and I've already got a number of articles from overseas, so we'll accept overseas articles as long as they have a African feel about it that we can talk about. So we do invite that type of article. From a historical point of view, talking about history, the best way that a soldier can learn his craft, other than going out there and holding a rifle and being in action, the best other way to learning his craft is to look at historical examples and examine those historical examples from two different points of view. One, so that we don't repeat the mistakes of the past. And then from another point of view is to examine those campaigns and see, learn about the opportunities that these campaigns give us or presented to the general running the campaign. So very important to have a historical component, which we had in over there. And then also to explain to our members of the South African National Defence Force what doctrine is all about. Either codified doctrine or verbal doctrine needs to be defined, because it's not that well ventilated in our military at the moment. So that, hence that article about defining, laying the foundation of exactly what doctrine and the relationship of doctrine to way of war and how we codify it, etc. And then obviously we'll take personal experiences. We had a lovely article in there on I think it was Captain Cornelia, who just recently did a deployment to one of our border areas. And he came back with an experience, a lot of lessons learned there and that type of thing that other people can feed off.
I'm struck at the moment, And maybe it's just because I'm looking more into it these days, but I'm struck at the moment about the amount of geopolitical talk that has started to seep into the general conversations that people are talking. You start to hear words like choke point, blue water navy, the idea of the importance of different islands all over the place suddenly. And my reading of that is that it's because you're starting to see the return of kind of great power competition to how the world has run. And South Africa has a kind of interesting place in that because of where we are. We were traditionally the only way to get around the world if you weren't going through Suez, and that means that ports like Simonstown and our role in Namibia, which were historical but also current, Mozambique, these are also, all of these things are coming up in conversation. And I wonder, from a perspective of a journal like this, is geostrategy part of where you're thinking about how the military needs to operate?
Okay, that's an excellent question. So warfare is divided into three different sections. Your tactical, your operational, and your strategic, and we can go one further and say grand strategic, which is what you're talking about, and we can also add logistics. So those are the four, the five components of warfare that we want to examine. Now, it's always going to be an issue when we look at the geopolitical situation, the grand strategy of everything, or even the higher strategies. It's going to start getting political. And I don't want this to be a political piece. So I'm not afraid to look away at South Africa's role within the geopolitics, but I don't want to sort of invite a political situation. The military serves the government of the day. And we know for a fact that the government can change its strategic and geopolitical policies overnight. So we serve that government, it's up to them to decide what our strategy is. So I want to steer away from the politics of it, where it involves politics. But we have certain commitments to Africa. Not only that, but we have commitments to the world also. We've got one of the major sea lanes that needs to be looked after. And we also have peacekeeping and peace enforcement commitments to the rest of Africa. So we've got strategic ideas that need to be fulfilled and discussed and talked about within the journal. But I don't want it, two things I don't want. I don't want it to descend into a pure political, ideological type of a journal, because I don't feel that's a place for it, because I do believe that the military should be politically aloof. It serves everybody's interests best that way. And I also don't want it to turn into a complaint session where all we just do is we sit and bitch about our circumstances, which are very, very difficult. I want people to come up with solutions also. So to answer your question, yes, there is room for geopolitics within the journal, as long as we don't sort of take an ideological look at it, if that's even possible, to separate the two. And certainly we can look at some of the strategic concepts, which we did in this first journal, by the way. We looked at the budget, the South African budget, which is quite worrying for the SANDF, and how small and paltry it is compared to what other people are expending on their militaries within the world. Given all the different tasks that we've got to undertake here within South Africa and within Africa.
So I was actually going to ask you about that as well, because the military does come in for quite a lot of shtick sometimes.
Yes.
If you read the popular press around our deployment, say in Congo or something like that. But imagine, like, this is kind of an official journal of the military.
Yes.
So imagine you have to kind of walk a fine line between good, healthy self-criticism of issues and also having to deal with this outside criticism where the army doesn't have a voice.
Well, I must say, this is the first journal in this iteration that goes to Director of Intelligence before we produce it. And I instituted that because I don't want to put problems out there that are not for public consumption.
Mm.
There is a fine line, obviously, but I also want it to be a place where we can have a robust discussion. I don't want us to shy away from the problems. And as long as we can offer solutions, so if somebody's got a criticism to make or a suggestion to make, I'd like to see some of the solutions he's going to offer, or in succeeding issues where the issue that was put on the table can be fully discussed in a robust fashion. So we're not moving away from there. So that's going to be the role of the journal. What was the first part of your question?
I think you've covered it. Let me take you someplace that isn't South African, maybe, and talk about some military matters. I mean, we've got some stuff that militarily is coming to a head all of a sudden. Yes. In these two, I mean, the two big theaters is Europe and the Middle East.
Yes.
And there seems to be a change, as you said, almost overnight coming, particularly in the Ukraine theater. But militarily, what is your reading of I mean, the fact that Russia is the first time they've ever used any country, as far as I understand, is intercontinental ballistic missiles are being fired in anger at other states. I mean, that from a military perspective is, if nothing else, interesting.
No, absolutely. So let's look at the Ukraine war from the three different points of view that I spoke to you about: the tactical, operational, and the strategic. So looking at the tactical and the operational aspects, the war is not unsurprisingly, as most wars do at the end of the day, has descended into an attritional type of a battle, mm-hmm. which both sides are bleeding themselves white over a couple of meters of land. Not dissimilar to what was happening in World War One, mobility and maneuver have totally disappeared off the battlefield.
Yes.
And you've got these two armies busy slogging away at each other like heavyweight boxers. And just attritionally, just expending huge amounts of money, manpower, resources in the pursuit of a couple of hundred square meters of land. So it's quite disappointing from a maneuver. Where if you're a maneuverist and you believe in high maneuver.
And in a place like Kursk, which was famous for tank warfare,
yes,
in
exactly,
World War II.
Exactly. The ultimate site of combined arms warfare. So what has happened at the tactical and operational level is a failure of combined arms warfare. Which means that the four or five components that go into your air force, your navy, your tanks, your armor, have failed to work together to overcome the immobility and the trench warfare of the area. So it's a failure from that point of view. So that's enough said on that. You get the drift.
I think, yeah, that which I think is an important
I want to
question.
Deal with the strategic.
Yeah, so we're going to get to the strategic. I just want to take a quick break. You're right. Listening to 101.9 Chai FM. I'm Benji Shulman, and this is the New Blue Review.
This is the New Blue Review with Benji Shulman.
We are with Major David Katz. He was just talking to us before the break about Ukraine at the tactical level, and we were just about to move on to the strategic stuff. So what is going on there from your perspective?
Okay, so part of the problem of the attritional situation that we're experiencing now with the Ukraine-Russian war is because at the strategic level, the Ukrainians have been drip-fed by the West. At various stages, instead of a full commitment. I don't even know if a full commitment was possible. I mean, what does victory look like on that front? What does victory actually look like? So it's a difficult thing to define.
And would have it helped? I mean, like, yes. I'm kind of favorable to that view that you have, that the West kind of hamstrung a bit. But, I mean, assuming there had been proper air superiority, which there wasn't, yes. Would that been the decisive factor in pushing the Russians out?
I'm not 100% sure. Given the Russian history and their stoicism and the way they handle their wars, you know, they're not very good at the outset of a war. We've seen that on many occasions, but they're damn good finishers. So there's a whole lot going on out there that we don't really understand. And I'm sure the West didn't. The West was more or less having a holding action over there and seeing maybe whether they could bring off this attritional phase, bring both sides to the negotiating table. Now, what changes there totally is Trump coming in and promising to end this war within days of him arriving at the White House. We've yet to see if that's going to happen. If it is going to happen, then obviously the Ukrainians are going to, there's going to have to be a quid pro quo where I doubt whether the Ukrainians, territorially wise, are going to look the same as they did 3 years ago. They're going to lose quite a vast amount of their territory as part of it. So we'll have to see what develops over there. But certainly, with Trump coming in, it's going to be changing this whole geopolitical picture that we're looking at now. Especially so that Biden, in the last couple of days of his tenure, has now introduced a massive escalation by allowing American weaponry to be used on Russian territory. So that escalates it. For what reason, we don't know. We have no idea what went over there. But it's that last sort of jab as he leaves the White House that has stuck Trump with a massive problem that he's going to have to deal with it as he walks in.
I mean,
so it's very interesting.
The kind of annoying shorthand that everybody likes to discuss this conflict with is this like idea, it's the World War III. Like, do you think that the Russians are very serious around a potential nuclear strike?
Look, I think there's a lot of saber rattling involved, mm-hmm. and I think the Russians have been playing a very clever game. I think they've been holding out for the American elections. There's no doubt about it. So they've been behaving themselves to a certain extent, waiting for Trump to come in, to give Trump the best opportunity possible to sort out some type of a peace process over there. So they've been playing that type of game, and the rest is saber rattling. I mean, it has been. Whether somebody's going to hit the button, I mean, these things can go out of control very, very quickly. We've seen that in history. So who knows? But I would say to you, my guess is that no, I don't think we're as close as some people are saying.
Well, that on that slightly pleasant note, we will end. What I was just getting warmed up, Matt. We're going to have you back in the show, because that was a lot of fun, as it always is. Brings us to the end of the show. Thank you to everyone who helps put things together here. We've got Craig, who pushes all the big red buttons, Vusi Mukundi on the sound, and to you, dear listener, who joins us every single week. Do join us again next week on the New Blue Review.